This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl.
While there are a whole mess of unknowns about this crisis, what's becoming more clear by the day is that the pain is not going to be shared equally. Wealth is going to determine a lot about how people get through it, everything from what kind of health care they get to how they can ride out losing a job. The average white household in this country today has nearly 10 times the wealth of the average black household. And one reason for that goes back almost a century to something called redlining, the practice of restricting lending in certain neighborhoods based on race. Redlining has been illegal for decades now, but an exhibit that was touring the country before, you know, everything, it shows how racist housing policies continue to shape this economy. Marketplace's Amy Scott checked it out.
My guide is Nathan Connolly, a history professor at Johns Hopkins and an expert on race and capitalism. We met back when we still could meet face-to-face at Impact Hub Baltimore, a social justice-oriented incubator, to walk through the Undesign the Red Line exhibit. We started in front of an old street map of the city, one of hundreds created around the country.
So this is a security map produced by the Homeowners Loan Corporation in 1938.
The Homeowners Loan Corporation was a federal agency, part of the New Deal, created to refinance mortgages at risk of default because of the Great Depression.
And it illustrates what real estate assessors considered to be the riskiest and safest investments in the city of Baltimore in that time period.
Areas colored green were considered the safest places to invest, then blue and yellow. Areas in red were considered the riskiest, based on things like the age and quality of the housing stock, people's occupations, and the racial makeup of the neighborhood. The exhibit includes a copy of the form assessors used.
There's a separate entry on every single area description form, 5D, that just says Negro, yes or no. And the answer to that question would determine oftentimes what a neighborhood's value would be.
By the time the maps were drawn, Baltimore was already heavily segregated because of racist zoning laws and neighborhood covenants. Most of the inner city near the industrial harbor was red. Connolly says that line first determined who could get mortgage relief and keep their homes, and eventually who could get new mortgages.
So the combination of rapid defaults and the refusal to issue new mortgages is what created a pretty sharp asymmetry between areas that were considered to be good for single-family home occupancy and those that were really primed for predatory forms of rental entrepreneurship.
People often assume that redlining kept investors away, when in fact, speculators piled in, buying up homes and charging inflated rents to families they knew had few options.
And so there was a lot of capital, in fact, dumped into so-called red areas, but in ways that was about harvesting the highest returns on rental investment.
Redlining was eventually outlawed by the Fair Housing Act, signed by President Lyndon Johnson in 1968.
We have come some of the way, not near all of it. There is much yet to do.
Even now, a timeline in the exhibit shows how, over the decades, redlining paved the way for urban decay and white flight, mass incarceration, the foreclosure crisis, and the gentrification of today, and how all of that has prevented African-American communities from building generational wealth.
And the exhibit unpacks kind of the policy history. How did we design structural racism and design inequality into cities and places in ways that it really has never been undone?
That's Braden Crooks, one of the creators of Undesign the Red Line. The exhibit has appeared in New York, Des Moines, L.A., and dozens of other cities where the official lines have disappeared, but the racial and economic divisions remain.
There were 239 maps made. It was really ubiquitous across the country.
Undesign the Red Line has been used in campaigns for anti-discrimination legislation and affordable housing, which is becoming even more of a crisis because of the pandemic. At Impact Hub Baltimore, the exhibit is a backdrop for the work social entrepreneurs like Candace Chance are doing to build a new legacy. In her neighborhood in West Baltimore, empty storefronts and hollowed-out row houses still mar the landscape.
And that is indicative of some of the pervasive residue of redlining.
But there are also freshly painted storefronts and affordable condos under construction. Chance is working with a Black-owned development company that's bought several vacant buildings with a plan to create jobs and sustainable home ownership in West Baltimore.
Because redlining was an intentional design, we have to intentionally undesign that through how we look at, you know, working with other folks who have the same mindset.
The idea is to build wealth within the community, not extract it. In Baltimore, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.